In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Today is February 2nd, year 2013, and we're celebrating the presentation of our Lord Jesus Christ in the temple and the purification of our Holy Mother Mary. If one thinks that the idolatrous and heretical interreligious abomination that took place at Assisi in 1986, in which apostate Catholics respected false gods, false religions, and entered into religious communion with non-Catholics was the first time that event took place, you'd be mistaken. The rotten, corrupted, and putrid waters of this kind of abomination were first tested in 1893 in Chicago at the World's Parliament of Religions, which was attended by apostate Catholics who promoted it, and by attending it, they also not only just attended it, where they were respecting false religions and false gods, they also entered into the religious communion with them by praying with all these different religious people that were present at the time. Buddhists were there, Hindus were there, Talmudic Jews were present, Protestants were present, schismatics. This event was promoted by apostate bishops, priests, laymen, and so-called cardinals were attending. They weren't real cardinals because that event would have caused them to lose their office by that one event alone. But almost 100% sure they never had the office in the first place. When you respect false gods and false religions, that's a sin against the first commandment. I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not have strange gods before thee. Deuteronomy 5:7, and see that I alone am, and there's no other God besides me. And that's Deuteronomy 32:39. And when you respect false gods and false religions, you sin against the first commandment, which is, and if it's a heretical group, you become a heretic. If it's a schismatical group, you also become schismatic. And if it's a pagan group, you become an idolater. So just by the mere fact that these particular apostate Catholics attended this event and were participating in it, it was a sin against the first commandment. It was formal idolatry. And that incurs automatic excommunication and loss of office. That is, if any of these bums ever had the office in the first place, and they didn't, I assure you. None of these so-called cardinals in the United States from the very inception of this country were true cardinals. They were all apostates. And the bishops that attended were apostates, and the priests and laymen that attended this conference, this parliament, were apostates just because of this one event alone. And that's not all. You're saying, what was the so-called Pope in Rome doing? And who was the so-called Pope in Rome at that time? Leo XIII. And I say so-called Pope because he was not the true Pope. He was an apostate anti-Pope because he glorified, praised, and defended the notorious heretics Origen and Tertullian. And he held several other heresies, which my book goes into. Now, this event took place in 1893, so he was already an apostate anti-Pope. But this adds to his crimes. He blessed this particular meeting before it took place and gave it its blessing. We're going to read from an official report of the Catholics, so-called Catholics, the apostate Catholics that were promoting this in the United States. And we're going to be reading it from the book titled The World's Parliament of Religions, the official report. And from here on, I'm going to just refer to it as the official report. And this is from pages 15 to 17. The Catholic Archbishops of America at their meeting in New York in November 1892 took action approving the participation of the Catholic Church in the Parliament and appointed the Rights Reverend John J. Keene, the able and liberal-minded rector of the Catholic University of America in Washington, to arrange with the General Committee for the proper and adequate presentation of the Catholic doctrine on the questions coming before the Parliament. Archbishop Ireland of St. Paul wrote on accepting a membership in the Advisory Council, "I promise my active cooperation in the work. The conception of such a religious assembly seems almost like an inspiration." Yeah, from who? The devil. In communicating the action of the Board of Archbishops, Bishop Keene wrote, "I ask leave to add the expression of my profound conviction that the project is an admirable one and that it ought to receive the encouragement of all who really love truth and charity and who wish to further their reign among mankind. It is only by a friendly and brotherly comparison of convictions that reasonable man can never come to an agreement. Brotherly, he's a heretic on that also. He's calling Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims, Jews, brothers. That's heresy. Can come to an agreement about the all-important truths, which are the foundation of religion, religion in general, see? And that an end can be put to religious divisions and antagonisms, which are a grief to our Father in heaven. Oh. Another heresy. He's saying that the Hindus and the Buddhists and the Tamil Jews, we all have the same Father in heaven. Such an assemblage of intelligent and conscientious men presented their religious convictions without minimizing, without acrimony, without controversy, which means don't condemn nobody, and don't tell anybody that their gods are false and their religions are false, with love of the truth and humanity. The love of humanity, right? What about God, the true God? Will be an honorable event in the history of religion and cannot fail to accomplish much good. Now there he is paving the road and promoting this world's parliament of religions that's going to take place in 1893. Now, I'm going to first give you a list of some of the apostate Catholics that attended this interreligious abomination. James Gibbons, the pretend cardinal and pretend Archbishop of Baltimore. Patrick A. Feehan, pretend Archbishop of Chicago. Patrick Ryan, pretend Archbishop of Philadelphia. William J. Onahan, secretary to so-called Catholic Congress. Bishop Connor, Winona, Minnesota. John J. Keene, Bishop and Rector of Catholic University of America, a cesspool of iniquity from its inception. Dr. Thomas O'Gorman, then Professor of Church History in Washington University, since then Bishop of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Father Hewitt, Father Hecker's successor. Father Hecker was the main heretic, Americanist heretic that promoted Americanism. A real abominable Americanist heretic whom these guys all loved. And these guys were all Americanist heretics on top of it. John Ireland, pretend Archbishop of St. Paul. Father Elliot, leading American Americanist heretic and author of The Life of Father Hecker. And Jansen's pretend Archbishop. These were just some of the apostate Catholics that promoted and attended this event, where they respected false religions, never condemned their false gods, never condemned their religions, never told them they were on the road to hell, and actually even praised them and mentioned to them as if they were brothers and worthy of salvation. This took place during the speeches that happened during the conference. Now, I just mentioned before that apostate anti-pope Leo XIII not only knew about this parliament, he actually gave it his blessing. We're going to read about this from the World's Parliament of Religions official report again, book 2, page 1407. Cardinal Gibbons asserted the importance of discussion to follow in shaping public opinion and urged charity and courtesy in all the proceedings. He referred to a letter from Pope Leo XIII to himself bestowing upon the Congress his apostolic benediction. The letter was read by Mr. Onahan. And we have a copy of the letter from another book, which I'm going to be quoting from, called Neely's History of the Parliament of Religions, 1894. We're going to call it Neely's History. Or I'll just mention the whole title. But we're going to read Apostate Anti-Pope Leo XIII's blessing. Actually, I should say curse, right? These guys can't bless anything. Pope Leo XIII signified his approval of the Congress by sending the following benediction. Leo XIII, Pope, to our beloved son James Gibbons, by the title of Sancta Maria and Transtevere, Cardinal Priest of the Holy Roman Church. What a joke that is, huh? These guys are all dressed up in costumes, just pretending. Archbishop of Baltimore, beloved son, health and apostolic benediction. It has afforded us much satisfaction to be informed by you that in the coming month of September, a large assembly of Catholic gentlemen will be meet at Chicago there to discuss matters of great interest and importance. Furthermore, we have been specially gratified by your devotion in regard to us and desiring as an auspicious beginning for such Congress our blessing and our prayers. This filial request we do indeed most readily grant and beseech Almighty God that by his hand and the light of his wisdom, he may graciously be pleased to assist and illumine all who are about to assemble with you, and that he may enrich with the treasures of his choices, gifts, your deliberations, and conclusions. To you, therefore, our beloved Son, and to all who take part in the Congress aforesaid and to the clergy and faithful committed to your care, we lovingly and the Lord impart apostolic benediction, given at Rome at St. Peter's on the 7th of August in the year of our Lord, 1893, and of our pontificate the 16th. There it is. He's given the Congress his blessing. Now, before I go on and actually give quotes and pictures and we show you what took place at this idolatrous and heretical abomination, I'm going to explain to you first and foremost the three major sins that are being committed. The first is mortal sin for breaking the first commandment of God. As I just mentioned earlier, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt not have strange gods before thee. When you come together and respect a false religion or a false god, you are giving them credibility and you are putting them equal to or even above the true God. Nothing short of condemning the false gods and false religions suffices in the eyes of the true God. In other words, you have to go in front of them and say, I love all you people out there, but I'm here to tell you that every one of your gods are false. Every one of your religions are false. There's only one true God, the Catholic God. There's only one true religion, the Catholic religion. We're here to preach that to you, that unless you believe it and come into that church, you will be damned. Anything short of that, you're respecting them. This is what went on at Assisi in 1986. It's going on in the Vatican II Church, and it's been going on for a long time before that, as you're reading here. This has been going on for a long time. Anything short of that, you're respecting them, you're putting them on equal or at least above God, or you're turning God into some type of a cyclops, a monster, a multiple type of, has different split personalities. This is what you're doing. So the first thing that they're committing, anybody who supported it, anybody who promoted it, anybody who did not condemn it to the highest heaven as an act of idolatry and heresy, is guilty of the mortal sin of breaking the first commandment and is an idolater and is a heretic. And that alone would automatically excommunicate you, place you outside the Catholic Church, and ban you from holding any offices. That's the first crime. The next mortal sin they are guilty of is for praying in communion with these non-Catholics. You're going to see that they prayed in communion with all these different non-Catholics that were present. We read, King David says in Psalm 25:5, I hated the assembly of the malignant, and with the wicked I will not sit. St. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 6:14-17, bear not the yoke with unbelievers, for what participation hath justice with injustice? And what fellowship hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? And what part hath the faithful with the unbeliever? And what agreement hath the temple of God with that of idols? Wherefore go out from amongst them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. Be ye separate from them. Do not be with them in religious communion or in religious gatherings, unless you're going to try to convert them and condemn their false religions and false gods. We read at the Council of Carthage in 257 AD, one must neither pray nor sing psalms with heretics, and whosoever shall communicate with those who are cut off from the communion of church, whether clergy or layman, let him be excommunicated. The Third Council of Constantinople, 681 AD. If any ecclesiastic or layman shall go into the meeting houses of heretics to join in prayer with them, let them be deposed and deprived of communion, banned from office. Third Lateran Council, 1179, we declare that day heretics and their defenders and those who receive them are under anathema. These are all solemn definitions of the true Holy Catholic Church, placing these bums outside the Catholic Church and under an ipso facto automatic excommunication for praying and communion with non-Catholics. The third major sin they commit, mortal sins, are mortal sins of omission. Mortal sins of omission, because they did not condemn the religions. They didn't get up there and say, every one of your religions is false and an abomination. Your gods are false and an abomination. You can't be saved where you are. You're on the road to hell. I'm telling you this because I love you, but that's the truth. If you're not doing that, you've sinned by omission. And you share in the guilt of everybody in that Rome who you did not properly, sufficiently denounce and whose religion you did not condemn. We read about sins of omission in the Catechism. How many ways may we either cause or share in the guilt of another sin? And two of those ways is by concealment and by silence. Ezekiel 3:17 to 18. Son of man, I've made thee a watchman to the house of Israel, and thou shalt hear the word out of my mouth, and thou shalt tell it to them from me. If when I say to the wicked, thou shalt surely die, thou declare it not to him, nor speak to him, that he may be converted from his wicked and evil way and live, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but I shall require his blood at thy hand. If you do not tell those Protestants, those schismatics, those Hindus, those Buddhists, those apostate and Talmudic Jews, that they are on the road to hell and that they need to become Catholic to be saved, and you don't tell them what their sins are and their false religions, you will share in their iniquity. You're going to end up going to hell along with them when they die. St. Paul says in Romans 1:18 and 32, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and injustice of those men who detain the truth of God in injustice, who having known the justice of God, these so-called Catholics, did not understand that they who do such things are worthy of death, and not only that they that do them, but they also let consent to them that do them. So you know, and that as a Catholic, you're supposed to know, it's a basic dogma that all these guys are worshiping false gods and practicing false religions. It's your first duty to tell them that. For the honor and the glory of the true God, the Catholic God, that's the first reason you're doing it. And then for the salvation of their own soul, and then for your own soul. And we read by Pope St. Felix III, he said, not to oppose errors, to approve it, and indeed to neglect to confound evil men when we can do it is no less a sin than to encourage them. Now that was just a little preview of, first that we put that up and to show you what kind of sins these guys are committing. Now we're going to read from some of the events that took place during this abomination. I'll be reading from Neely's History of the Parliament of Religions from pages 33 to 36. Which is going to describe this abomination. It's the chapter 1, the first day, September 11th. Oh, we have another infamous September 11th, 9-11. I wonder if it's got a connection here, huh? That's when it started. Words of greeting. The assembling of the World's Parliament of Religions in the forenoon of September 11th, 1893, was proclaimed in due form by 10 strokes of the New Liberty Bell. Sounds like the Brotherhood of the Bell, you know, like sometimes it's a Masonic ritual, right? Upon which is inscribed the words of Him, capital, who is the ensign of the people. A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another. They love throwing that around, right? If they really loved these guys, they would have told them they're on the road to hell. The 10 strokes represented the 10 chief religions of the world, each of which had a prominent place in the remarkable gathering of the nations. Prior to the opening hour, the doors of the Art Palace were besieged by multitudes eager to secure seats in the auditorium or gallery of the Great Hall of Columbus in which they were assembled. Dr. J.H. Barrows and other committee men, Protestant, were early in the building to give information, and the office of President Bonney, another Protestant, was turned into a reception room where representatives, both men and women, arrayed in picturesque attire, formed a medley of most pleasing to every observer. An audience of about 4,000 people had assembled before the time announced for the opening of the exercises and awaited in silence the appearance of the interesting speakers. The mass of people who were so wonderfully quiet that the fluttering of the wings was heard when a tiny bird flew through an open window and over the vacant platform. Is this guy a sap or one? Slap the sap, you know? Come on, cut the bull crap. All right? The flattering little Tweety bird. You know, he's trying to make you believe. That's the Holy Spirit coming in here. Yeah. Or something. That's blessed by God because a little bird went in there. You weren't looking down at your feet. There were a lot of cockroaches and snakes running around too, you idiot. The organist played Jerusalem the Golden. In the interval of waiting, the triumphant strains fitly expressed the feeling of many intensely expectant hearts. At the appointed hour for the commencement of the proceedings, the crowds on the right-hand aisle of the auditorium parted in quiet step, and two by two, the royal delegates of the one great king, like God, he's saying, you know, he's capitalizing it, escorted by the managers of the parliament, came slowly into view. Heading the procession and arm in arm were President Bonney and Cardinal Gibbons. Arm in arm. He's probably smooching with them in the back room. Who knows what else they were doing? Only God knows. Bunch of homos, probably. But if not, this is worse than even homosexuality, what I'm talking about here, and it leads to all that. Following whom came Mrs. Potter Palmer and Mrs. Charles Henrotin. Next in order moved a stately column composed of men of many tongues, of many lands, of many races, disciples of Christ, of Mohammed, of Buddha, of Brahma, of Confucius, in the name of a common God for the glorification of the Eternal Father. The sight was most remarkable. Remarkable indeed. These guys had to be Freemasons, yeah. Even these idiots. What Hindu or Buddhist would attend this, or Protestant, yeah. Or Schismatic? They had to be, they're not even convicted to their own false religions. They had to be like some type of Freemasons, or even worse because of their hypocrisy. There were strange robes, turbans and tunics, crosses and crescents, flowing hair and tonsured heads. The representatives marched down the center aisle, and amid the cheer that welled up from the hearts of 4,000 men and women, took their seats in triple rows upon the platform beneath the wavy flags of many nations. In the center of the company and seated in a huge chair of curiously wrought iron was His Eminence James Cardinal Gibbons, magnificent in his robes of red. On the right sat the priests of the Celestial Empire and their long flowing garments of white. On the left were the patriarchs of the old Greek church, the schismatics, wearing strangely formed hats, somber cassocks of black, and leaning on ivory sticks carved with figures representing ancient rites. Peculiar modes of dress were indicative of different religions. The Chinese Secretary of Legation wore the robes of a mandarin. The high priest of the state religion of Japan was arrayed in flowing robes, presenting the colors of the rainbow. Buddhist monks were attired in garments of white and yellow. An orange turban and a robe made the Brahmin conspicuous. The Greek Archbishop of Zanati, from whom the high headgear there fell to the waist of a black veil, was brilliant in purple robe and black cassock, and glittering as to his breast in the chains of gold. Dharmapala, the reformed Buddhist, was recognized in his woolen garments and in the black clothes. Hardly to be distinguished from European dress was Mozomador, author of The Oriental Christ, a most touching history of a soul struggling homeward to God. In a golden bond of friendship, the oldest of the religions of the world greeted the youngest of the religions. From faraway India, from the snow-locked crest of the Himalayas, from the valleys of the Tigris and the Euphrates, the representatives of a race and a century old and decrepit with age clasped hands with a race now in the first flutter of youth and blossom of manhood. Oh, my Lord. These guys have to go to school to learn how to talk like this. What a bunch of horse crap. What a bunch, horrible. It was a grand intermingling of religions, a salutary of an unprecedented era of goodwill among men, an event that will linger in the minds of men through coming ages. You better believe that. Vatican II didn't forget it, did they? A gathering under the star of Christianity, whose steady beaming draws wise men of the East to the unfading brightness of the glowing splendor of the Prince of Peace. The historic assembly assembled was called to order by President C. Bonney, and suddenly from the great organ in the galley broke forth of the strains of the 100, the inspiring measures. From all that dwell beneath the skies, let the Creator praise arise. Which Creator? I would have to ask, right? Which Creator? The Buddhist, the Hindu, the Talmud, the Jew, the Protestant, the Schismatic, the so-called Catholic. Not one of them was worshiping the true God, but they're a bunch of hypocrites even according to their own beliefs. And the vast audience arose and filled the hall with music of humanity's thanksgiving. Isn't that nice, humanity's thanksgiving? After the song had died away, a moment of silence, which the uplifted hand of Cardinal Gibbons sustained, then his voice began. Our Father, who art in heaven, and was lost in a rush of voices which followed in the well-known universal prayer. This supreme moment of the 19th century was reached. They got a so-called Catholic to get up there and act like a dope doing this kind of a thing. He's the first one probably to ever even attempted to do something like this, apostate Catholic. So he's praying the Our Father prayer with all them. It says Asia, Africa, Europe, America, and the Isles of the Sea together called him Father. This harmonious use of the Lord's Prayer by Jews, Mohammedans, Buddhists, Brahmins and all divisions of Christians seemed a rainbow of promise, pointing to the time when the will of God will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now I ask you, is that not praying in communion with non-Catholics? Everybody in that room who did it? And what God are you praying to? What about God in all of this? What about the Catholic God in all of this? What about the Most Blessed and Holy Trinity in all of this? What does he think about it? All they care about is their common humanity, their humanism. They don't care one bit about the true God. Not even the pagans that are near care about their own gods even. It is an absolute abomination what you've just read here. And here you see he prayed. This alone is so odious. This guy should be blasted out of the water as an apostate, idolatrous, automatically excommunicated, heretic and idolater. Now, right after that, the notorious idolater and heretic, so-called Archbishop Feehan, who was the pretend bishop of Chicago, gave a speech. And I read again from the official report of the World Parliament, page 79 and 80. The manifestation of sympathy and approval which followed the address of the chairman of the General Committee had not subsided when it was changed into hearty greeting to the Most Reverend Archbishop of Chicago, who has introduced to speak in the name of the Catholic Communion. And here's some clips from his speech. Men have come from distant lands, from many shores. They represent many types of races. They represent many forms of faith. In all, there is a great diversity of opinion, but in all, there is a great high motive. A diversity of opinion. That's what we now call idolatry and heresy. A diversity of opinions. Of all the things our city has seen and heard during these passing months, the highest and greatest is now to be presented to it. For earnest men, learned and eloquent men of different faiths have come to speak and to tell us of those things that are of the highest and deepest interest to us all. He's lost. So evidently, Feehan is telling us that all these nominal Catholics went there because they're lost and they want to learn. Hey, maybe you guys can teach us something, you know? I thought as a little kid, I thought the Buddhists might have been right. Maybe you guys are right. I want to hear from the Hindus. I'm going to weigh this thing out when it's all done. He's going to learn from these other false religions. That's a guy who's lost, right? Well, I feel it's bad that this took place in Chicago, but there's nothing we can do. I know you were born in Chicago.
You know, Chicago, but look at... song in the beginning.
Chicago, it's my kind of town. Now he goes on. When learned men representing the thought of the world on religion, come to tell us of God and of His truth. Of His truth. These people are going to tell us about the true God and the truth, and of life and of death and of immortality and justice and of goodness and of charity, then we listen. I told the brothers before, if I had a baseball bat, I'd beat their heads silly till mush. I would beat their heads, I'd have every brother line up, and I'd say, you take a shot too, because that's death. If it's with your power, if you were living that, to assassinate these bastards, this is unbelievable. But it's the whole, we'd have to assassinate the whole world. That's how bad it is. This wasn't an isolated, there were a lot of people thinking like these people. No matter how we may differ in faith or in religion, there is one thing that is in common to us all. That is a common humanity. We're all human beings. We wake up in the morning, we sleep at night, we breathe and we eat. We go to the bathroom, we do a couple other things. We're all humans. Since when is that enough to make you saved? You see, that's humanism. I am saved by the mere fact that I am a human being. Everybody that dies today, isn't he in heaven? On the news and everything, no matter how bad he is. Even if he's a cuckoo brain to the highest degree, he's saved. Humanism to the highest, we're all, what does that mean? And you want to talk about knocking the first commandment of loving God first and then your neighbor second. They're doing this, they're idolizing the human race. God has nothing in this picture. He says, and these men representing the races and face of the world, meeting together and talking together and seeing one another, will have for each other in the end a sincere respect and reverence and a cordial and fraternal feeling of friendship. There is respecting the false religions right there. Lord only knows what happened after this thing in the back room with these guys. As the privilege which I prize very much has been given to me, I bid them all in my own name and of that which I represent a most cordial welcome. And then now we get on to the speech of, right after that, Gibbons. President Bonney then introduced amid loud cheering His Eminence James Cardinal Gibbons of Baltimore, explaining that it was in spite of illness that the Cardinal had come so far in order to respond to the address of welcome. It looks like God was trying to warn him not to show up. Got him a little bit sick, but he still wanted to go. So the doctors probably shot him up with dope or whatever to get him up there so he can make this speech and get out there and make his thing known. These guys are probably, I'm definitely Freemasons. You don't behave like this unless you're a Freemason. And this is on page 80 and 81 of the book. And here's his speech. I should be wanting in my duty as a minister of the Catholic Church if I did not say that it is our desire to present the claims of the Catholic Church to the observation and, if possible, to the acceptance of every right-minded man that will listen to us. Now, that's the closest anyone ever comes to trying to convert these people. But he's not saying they need to be converted. He's not saying it's absolute necessary for you to be saved. It would just be nice to join our group because it's the best group and the easiest way to get to heaven. That's sort of the way he's presenting it here, right? And listen to what he says right after this. But we appeal only to the tribunal of conscience and of the intellect. That's the follow your own conscience heresy. What he's saying is, all you people can be saved right where you are, because as long as you believe that your religion is the true religion and you follow it sincerely, you can be saved. That's the follow your own conscience heresy. That Buddhist, if he believes his Buddhist religion is true, and he's sincere about it, he can be saved. So he's saying to these people, if you happen not to believe what I'm telling you, don't worry about it. Follow your conscience and you can be saved. That's what he's saying. He's not telling them what a true Catholic should tell them. I'm here to tell you about the one true religion that you need to belong to be saved, because you're all on the road to hell right now, 100% definite. He's not saying that. That's the closest anybody ever came anyway to trying to call these people to conversion, and that's no call to conversion. Now he goes on to say, but though we do not agree in matters of faith, as the most reverend and Archbishop of Chicago has said, thanks be to God, there is one platform on which we all stand united. It is the platform of charity, of humanity, and of benevolence. Even though we worship false gods, and you guys worship, I believe you guys worship false gods, who cares about that? We thank God, he says, we are all humans. That's what he's saying. And we give charity. They're all concerned about the corporal works of mercy, never the spiritual. Give charity, give medicine, give. They want to build a human utopia minus the true God. What an abomination this is. Our blessed Redeemer came upon the earth to break down the wall of partition that separated race from race and people from people and tribe from tribe, and has made us one people, one family, recognizing God as our common Father and Jesus Christ as our brother. That's heresy. Now he's saying Jesus Christ is the brother of all these people out there. This apostate wants to merge all the different religions in the world in one big peaceful unity, but what does the one true God say about such an abomination as that? Jesus said in Matthew 10:34-36, do not think that I came to send peace upon the earth. I came not to send peace, but the sword. I came to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemy shall be in his own household. And he said it in other words in Luke 12:51-52, think ye that I am come to give peace on the earth? I tell you, no, but separation. There shall be from henceforth five in one house divided, three against two and two against three. Every false religion is abomination to God and everybody that practices it. So those who practice the true religion and good Catholics are going to be at odds with these people. There's a barrier. There's an inseparable wall. One serves Satan and the other serves God. And he wants to try to merge Satan with God into one creature with two heads, Satan and God together. That's what he's trying to do. There's a natural antagonism, a natural battle and combat and war that takes place. St. Paul says this in 2 Corinthians 6:14-17. Bear not the yoke with unbelievers, for what participation hath justice with injustice? Or what fellowship hath light with darkness? Or what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath the faithful with the unbeliever? And what agreement hath the temple of God with that of idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God saith, I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, go out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. And this apostate wants you to touch it, marry it, merge with it, and break down the walls. This bastard, what gospel is he preaching? It's not even, Satan's using these idiots to do it. It's even illogical according to people who are practicing these false religions. That they should merge their various different beliefs. They got a God that's either schizophrenic and doesn't know who he is, or he's multiple gods from one day to the next, he doesn't know which God he is. We're born into combat here. We're born in enemy territory, and it's us against them. It's Catholics against the unbelievers. This man wants to break down those barriers. He wants to merge God with Satan. And he thinks he's going to have peace in doing such a thing when the true God will never allow such things. Jesus said, I came not to bring peace, but the sword. And those knuckleheads, you got to say something about these non-Catholics. They're praying the Our Father prayer, the Buddhists and the Hindus with this guy. Where's their conviction, you know? I wonder if, like, some of these guys, when they go home, they get yelled at by some of their instructors. Some people at home saying, how could you attend such a thing? He goes on to say, I trust that we shall all leave this hall animated by a greater love for one another, for love knows no distinction of faith. Wow. See, he's saying, if that's an implication that no matter what faith you are, you can be saved even. Yeah. That loving somebody is enough to get you to heaven. You don't have to love God and obey his commandments. That's what's going on here. For as the apostle, and if you really loved these people, and he got up in that platform, and he looked out over those people, really loved them, he would say what I say. I would say it like this. Look, I've got to tell you people, it's because I love you. It's not because I hate you. You can get angry at you if you want, but every one of your religions is false and your gods is false. You've got to become a Catholic to be saved. That's if you love somebody. See, because that's eternal salvation. When he's lying to them, but he's part of them too, they're on the road to hell. So who cares if they have your humanity for 80 years or 90 years? What's the most you're going to live, 100 years, 120 years? And after that, what happens? And you die. They bury your body in the grave and you end up going to hell for all eternity. You understand? Nothing here is being said about the true spiritual well-being of the soul. And if they do talk about it, they even justify these people in their false religions. Now, there was other speeches that took place. Now we're going to fast forward to the closing speech of the notorious idolater and heretic king. He was extremely horrible. This king guy was one of the worst Americanists. They're all bad, though. I'll do another lecture on the Americanist heresy another time, but this all relates to it. Now we're going to read again from the official report, page 182. The cheering which followed Bishop Arnett's address has scarcely ended when President Bonney presented the popular and tolerant Bishop King of the Catholic University of America, Washington, who, as always, was received with the most cordial enthusiasm. He said, quote, friends and brethren. There you go. All right, heresy right there, brethren, right? When in the midst of the men who, under the inspiration of that motto, not things but men, were organizing the congresses of the world, Dr. Barrows arose and proclaimed the grand idea that all the religions of the world should be brought here together. Men said, it is impossible. He has done it, and may it make his name immortal. There we go with the name thing again, right? His name's going to be immortal. Well, what about him? Just his name? Yeah, an infamy. His name. He's implying the guy's going to be saved. He's implying that the guy is just and righteous. When the invitation to this parliament was sent to the old Catholic Church, and she was asked if she would come here, people said, will she come? And the old church has come here, and she is rejoiced to meet her fellow men, her fellow believers, her fellow lovers of every shade of humanity and every shade of creed. Boy, these guys are carnal. These guys are filthy bastards. They're probably sodomizing one another in the back room. Every shade of creed, she is rejoiced to meet here the representatives of the old religions of the world. And she says to them, we leave here. We will go to our homes. We will go the olden ways. Friends, we will not look back to the scene of union and weep because separation still continues. But will we not pray that there may have been planted here a seed that will grow to union, wide and perfect? Oh, let us pray for unity, end quote. After the close of Mr. Bonney's address, as the Great Assembly joined with Dr. Emil G. Hirsch in the Lord's Prayer. Now you got a rabbi leading the Lord's Prayer. This was, I guess, Emerald Hirsch, yeah. This was followed by a prayer of benediction delivered with great earnestness by Bishop Keene, again, praying in communion with these non-Catholics. Dr. Barrows retired to the Hall of Washington, delivered his address, and after the multitude had pronounced, and after the multitudes had joined with Dr. Hirsch in the universal prayer, and the benediction had been pronounced by Bishop Keene, he pronounced the world parliaments of religions adjourned without day. Meantime, President Bonney in the Hall of Columbus invited the audience to join with the Apollo Club in singing America, after which the first great parliament of religions would declare closed, end quote. I have to say, too, you know, the United States was the one who first had this big revolution and transported it over to France. You're going to find out, too, how they try to push this stuff. This first happened here in the United States, and they try to push it throughout the world. Now, after this whole event was over, people would say, well, I know apostate anti-pope Leo XIII, that's not they would call him. We call him an apostate anti-pope. Gave it its benediction. He blessed it, but did he know what was going to go on? Maybe he didn't know. Well, let's read about this, how he didn't know. About 1 month after, later, on September 11th, 1893, the World Parliament of Parliaments of Religions commenced, and it lasted until September 28th. Then, after it ended, Monsignor O'Connell then gave apostate to Pope Leo XIII an official report of the Parliament. I quote from a book titled Father Hecker, Is He a Saint? By the Reverend Charles Magnin. Now, he's got a lot of good stuff in here, but he's got a lot of bad stuff. Before I mention, he's one of your typical conservatives who's also a notorious heretic on many other points, denies the salvation dogmas. So I got to warn you about him. But even though he hates what's going on, and he does not like this interreligious stuff, he hates it. And there's a lot of conservatives that hated it, but all of them were notorious heretics too, and that's why they couldn't really stand up against it properly. In the book, even though he's mentioning it, got a lot of good information, he never once condemns it as idolatrous and heretical, and he never once denounces the participants as idolaters and heretics, never. He's a non-judgmentalist and a non-punishmentalist. He happens not to like it. He's saying how bad it is, but he never goes far enough. Look at what his book is titled, Father Hecker, Is He a Saint? After he explains to you all these things that Father, it's a book, be careful when you read it, but he's got a lot of good stuff in there, shows you how absolutely notoriously heretical Father Hecker was as one of the fathers of the Americanist heresy, and he's showing you all these horrible things he's doing. In the end, he goes, well, who knows, maybe he was a saint, but subjective object. And he gets into this, he leaves it sort of like up to you. Follow your own conscience, you can be saved. So I'm warning you before I pull from the guy's book, okay? But he's got some good stuff in here nevertheless. But these are like your conservatives like Hutton Gibson even, who goes against the interreligious abominations, but he himself denies the salvation dogma. And I told him, how many times did I tell you, Mr. Hutton Gibson, that they first denied the salvation dogma before these interreligious abominations can take place? And this first was denied in the 16th century. And that wasn't even the first problem. We go back to scholasticism, theophilosophy, mythology, and all that. But nevertheless, we're going to read about from this Father Hecker, is Father Hecker a saint? From part 3, chapter 3, page 252, and he says, moreover, besides the persons already mentioned, we find Monsignor O'Connell, who undertook to present to the Pope the two volumes of the official report of the Chicago Parliament of Religions. That's the book I'm reading to you from right now. So it's laying on Leo's lap. What does Leo do when he gets the book? Nothing. He remains silent because he's part of it. He's testing the waters. That's what they do. They throw it out and see if they can get away with it. If the conservative opposition gets too strong, then they finally speak out. But he remained silent and said nothing. So they took his silence, obviously. Not only did he bless it, now he remains silent and say, well, he approved of it. It emboldened the Americanist heretics to go out and commit more interreligious abominations for the next following 2 years. Here's what we read about this from Father Hecker, Is He a Saint? Part 3, Chapter 3, page 257. I got to give you a lead-in on this also. What they were trying to do was push for congresses in France, and they were having a really hard time getting into France. But they had all their Americanist heretics in there pushing it. They had Frenchmen that were American heretics pushing it. And they really wanted to get another congress going in Paris in 1900. And it wasn't really... It was very hard for them to get that happening, but in the meantime, they were conducting several other congresses in the United States, and they were hoping that they could export this thing over to Paris. Now, And it wasn't so easy for that to happen. But here's what we're reading. He said, it says, if the Congress of 1900 in Paris cannot take place, we shall always have the Congress of Chicago. And that alone is much. We shall always have seen priests, bishops, cardinals take part in the first parliament of religions uncensored by Rome. And of course, the Pope don't say anything. And he's the Pope, supposedly headed a church. He blessed it. He's encouraging it. Now, what's happening though? And I got, yeah, when was this? So for 2 years, they're starting to run wild with this. The conservatives are piping up. Leo's getting a lot of heat from the conservatives. So he finally gets under some type of pressure to say something. Guys like this Father Maggin even writing his book. He got a Roman imprimatur on it. He's complaining. But of course, they're heretics too. And that's why they're not succeeding. But nevertheless, he gets stuck in a bind. And there's a real big conflict in this issue. So now he finally determines apostate anti-pope Leo XIII to speak out 2 years later. After the waters have been tested and he's getting too much backwash. So he comes out and he criticizes these interreligious gatherings. I don't even know if you can say criticize might be too strong of a word. I'm getting done reading what he said about it. It really comes down to when he responds to it. He's saying, it doesn't even tell him that he doesn't condemn it, first of all. I'm going to read it to you in a minute. His response to it is, he doesn't condemn it. He doesn't denounce the people that attended it. He didn't say that all the nominal Catholics that he attended it are automatically excommunicated heretics and idolaters. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say the whole event was an abomination against God. All he says, first of all, is that it's not prudent. It's not the time for it right now. People aren't really accepting it yet. That's what it comes out to. And he's telling, when he's writing the letter to these people, he's saying, I counsel you not to do this. So he's giving them counsel. I advise you not to do this. It's really not a good idea. Or at least not now. That's what the letter comes out to. I'm going to read it to you. Now, in this particular response, we have several mortal sins against the faith. He's defending and patronizing false gods, false religions, and notorious heretics and idolaters. So therefore, he's guilty of the same. All right, which again, that's an act of formal heresy and idolatry on his part for not condemning it for what it is and for not denouncing it for what it is. And he's guilty of sins of omission also in his response to this. And I'm going to read the response, and then you're going to see the result of it. After he was done with it, it didn't stop anything because it was so weak. I'm going to read it again from Father Heckert's Is He a Saint? From page 259. Suddenly Rome spoke, and men who had discounted its silence were confounded. This guy, imagine, he's cheerleading. He's saying, Leo spoke, he got you. Wait till I read the letter. He speaks like you do, imagine, like all you conservatives, like your Father Harrison's, like a big wimp. Like a squeaky little mouse with no conviction and nothing in it. But he's acting like this was such a heavy-duty condemnation, and it wasn't really. A letter from the Sovereign Pontiff was published in the papers. It was addressed to Monsignor, now Cardinal Sottoli, the Apostolic Delegate of the Holy See to the United States. We subjoined the document. Now, although even though this letter was weak, that they still didn't like this neither. It was printed in the Ecclesiastical Review. And they just printed the letter, made no comment on it, and they sort of didn't want anybody to know about it, but they had to print it. It was some rule they have to do that. But they were trying to keep even this letter secret, as weak as it is. But I'm going to read the letter to you now. I'm reading to you from the Ecclesiastical Review, volume 13, page 395. On September 19th, 1895, Pope Leo XIII dispatched an apostolic letter to the Archbishop Francis Sottoli, apostolic delegate to the United States. The following is a translation of the Latin original. Venerable brethren, health and apostolic benediction. He's blessing these guys, right? He's referring to the United States. Mm-hmm. We know that from time to time there are held in the United States of America assemblies to which both Catholics and those who dissent from the Catholic Church come promiscuously to discuss together religion and morals. In this we recognize the interest in religion, which from day to day is increasing among the people. Now that's stupid. What, religion hasn't always been interesting among people? From the beginning of fall of Adam and Eve, you had the true believers and unbelievers? What kind of statement is that? As time, religion, people are getting more interested in religion. Weren't they always? Even atheists are religious in their atheism. But although these common gatherings have been tolerated hitherto in prudent silence. Now he's telling you that he knew about it. And I tolerated it. He's tolerating evil. He's tolerating idolatry. He's tolerating heresy. He's tolerating heretics and idolaters. That's what he's saying. And he said by a prudent silence. That's like the guy who doesn't profess his faith to save his own ass. What he's really doing is he agrees with them. He's peeing coy here. He's one of them. He really wants it to happen, but he has to say something here, right? But that's what he says. So here's the sin of omission for not condemning it for what it is, right? It would seem to us more advisable for Catholics to have their meetings by themselves. It would be nice for you to do it, but you don't have to. You know, I advise it. Instead of, I forbid it, I ban it, it's an abomination. Everybody that attends it is an apostate and idolater, and anybody that has one in the future, not only are you an apostate and idolater, I'm going to send assassins out from the Vatican to kill your ass if I don't got power over you, and put you to death, you nominal Catholics. What kind of a response is that? I advise you not to do it. You squeaky little mouse. He says, while we have judged, venerable brethren, that in conformity with our apostolic duty, we must bring this matter to your notice, it gives us pleasure at the same time to express our commendation of the Institute of the Paulist Fathers. They have wisely adopted the plan of addressing our dissenting brethren openly. Heresy. He's calling Protestants and schismatics, and Buddhists were even there, and Jews, dissenting brethren, he calls them. Heresy. Openly before to explain Catholic teaching and to refute objections brought against them. In the meantime, venerable brother, beseeching in abundance of divine graces, curses, for you, we impart our apostolic blessings, curses, satanic curses, not apostolic blessings, in testimony of our special affection given at St. Peter's Rome, 18 September 1895, in the 18th year of our pontificate, so-called pontificate, knucklehead. This guy was an apostate anti-pope from day one. Now, I'll let the words of apostate anti-pope Leo XIII condemn himself from his encyclical Inimici Vis, 1892. An error which is not resisted is approved. A truth which is not defended is suppressed. He who does not oppose an evident crime is open to the suspicion of secret complicity, end quote. Now, after that letter went out, the conservatives thought they got a big victory. You got no victory. That was so weak. That was worse than weak. They kept doing it. They kept continuing on. And they were saying, Leo never can... Here's again, we call Americanism a phantom heresy. This interreligious thing he's talking about is another phantom thing. He never condemned any person or any event by name. Never. So they all kept doing it. And they're saying... And they said, he didn't condemn it. He just said it's not advisable. He said it wasn't prudent to do it right now, but he said a day will come when it will be prudent. And that is indeed what he meant. Magian tried to pretend he didn't mean that, but that's what everybody took it to mean. Now we're going to have some proof of this. That notorious idolater and heretic king was in Rome for about a year or two. I'm going to read from this. And he was in Rome, and he was treated as normal. He wasn't condemned or denounced, and he was in Rome. And he's reporting about what happened when he was in Rome. I'm going to read from this. Father Hecker, is he a saint? Pages 238 to 244. The March 1898 member of the Catholic World contains a long article sent from Rome by Monsignor Keane, in which we read, among other things, that his participation in the Parliament of Religion has not been appreciated in the Eternal City. We don't appreciate it. We don't advise it. But he's still there. He's in good standing. Mm-hmm. He's in good standing. Monsignor Keane explains to his American friends how difficult it is for the Americanism not merely to win acceptance, but even to make itself understood in old Europe. Keane goes on to say, yet once again, our Holy Father, knowing full well how totally different are the religious conditions and mental tendencies of Europe, has most wisely decreed that the parliament of this kind would be unadvisable. See, just not ready for now. A point worthy of attention. See, and that's the end of Keane's quote. So, in other words, it's not advisable for now, but we can still do it. The fact that Keane's walking around, he's not condemned. It is. You can still do it. At a future point. Maybe when he's not looking. Maybe when he may not send, sneak a couple of them in. And now, it says, a point. Now, here's the back to the book. What he's saying. A point worthy of attention in this passage is the opinion it tends to accredit in America. One would gather from it that the sovereign pontiff considers the idea of an universal congress of religious as simply inopportune in the present state of the public mind in Europe. That's right, Mr. Maggi. And he doesn't, he's thinking that, he's making you think that because it's true. If he really thought it was an abomination, he would have condemned them and absolutely banned it. Writing from Rome, after a year's residence, there a man, he was here for a year, there a man king might be better informed. Better informed, he was never denounced. This guy imagine he's adding more to Leo's words than are there. He's walking around in Rome and nothing's happening to the guy. But the truth is that in diverse subjects, which he touches upon in his recent article in the Catholic World, Monsignor King shows no better understanding of the Roman spirit. And the teachings of Leo XIII, and especially in his encyclical Longinqua Oceana, he never sees more than prudent counsels and considerations of opportuneness. He's right. That's a heretical encyclical that glorifies America and praises Americanism and democracy and the founding fathers. It's an abomination encyclical. And he's saying in there that he's trying to say that, Leo was tough in that encyclical. No, he wasn't. King was right. Leo supports Americanism, even though he came out and condemned it in one of his encyclicals. His actions are to support them and to defend them. This is also like the mark of an infiltrator, too. You got to almost believe that Leo XIII was a Freemason, which is possible. You can read that in my book, Apostate Antipopes, Against Apostate Antipope Leo XIII, and you'll read all the other crimes I was speaking about before. Now, we're going to get into the opportune moment that people are waiting for. We're going to read in France, one of the leading Americanist heretics in France, this Abbe Charbonnel, who writes about this future moment that's going to happen when they can have this event, which, as we know, it took place when? In the Second Vatican Council and the CC in 1986. But we're going to read again from Father Hecker, Is He a Saint? And this is from pages 254 to 256. The same thought presented with equal clearness under another form is to be found in an article of the Revue de Paris of September 1st, 1895, summing up a few lines, the fundamental idea of the Congress of Religions by Abbe Charbonnel. He wrote, "Doubtless, the fusion of all creeds into one is a vain dream, but would it not be possible to attempt what might be called the moral union of religions? A pact of silence might be made on the dogmatic peculiarities which divide men's minds, and a pact of common action on all that unites men's hearts. Shut up about our dogmas. Don't preach the faith. Be silent about it. Who cares? By the moral making and consoling virtue which is in every faith." It would mean the abandonment of old fanaticisms. It would mean the breaking of the long tradition of chicanery, which has kept men rabid under subtle disagreements in doctrine. Why should we argue? You wonder if this guy believes in anything. Actually, he's like an atheist. He believes in nothing. His religious beliefs mean absolutely nothing. That's a humanist in his pure form. All he believes in is just human beings and a utopia without God. He's an atheist. It would be the harbinger of a new era in which people would think less of separating themselves into sects and chapels, of digging trenches and raising barriers, than of diffusing through a noble understanding among themselves a social benefit of the sentiment of religion. The time has come for this supreme union of religions. People are tired of idle quarrels between believers of different faith, or even between believers and philosophers, tired of polemics, polemos wars, in which the noblest convictions always lose their serene tolerance which constitutes their grandeur. Throw out all your religions and don't talk about them anymore. They don't matter. Such Catholics, throw out your religion and come together. You're all human beings. Such is the project. And there'll be no more wars. Such is the project. The mere fact of this exposition is a sign of the times. He's saying of the sign of the times. 2 years ago, this would have not been possible, but for after all, the Universal Congress of Religions would be the first council without anathemas ever held in old Europe. He said that the Chicago thing started the ball rolling, and he's looking for a universal council without anathemas to be held in Europe. And when was that held? The Vatican Council. That was the first council known as a council with no anathemas. It's known as that, the first council that contained no anathemas. How do we know that? Let's read Apostate Antipope John XXIII's opening speech to the Second Vatican Council in 1962. "The Church has always opposed these errors, Frequently, she has condemned them with the greatest severity. Nowadays, however, this is what the day Chabanel was looking forward to. This is his spiritual satanic buddy bringing it to be. Nowadays, however, the spouse of Christ prefers to make use of the medicine of mercy rather than of severity. She considers that she meets the needs of the present day by demonstrating the validity of her teaching rather than by condemnations. No more anathemas. So they're presenting the Catholic Church's teachings as something nice to believe in. Gee, it would be peachy clean and nice if you became Catholic, but you really don't have to because there's no condemnations if you don't. You see? It's all academic. It would be a nice, maybe it's the quickest road, but it's not the only road. No more condemnations. And so the moment really finally did come to pass here. But this was being pushed way back in 1893. So when people sit back and think this Vatican Council thing is the first time this ever happened, you're gravely mistaken. We're going to go back even further than 1893 as we go along and show you how bad it was way before 1893 even. Now, we're going to end this lecture with the lesser of the evils of the non-Catholics. There are a few non-Catholics that weren't so stupid or hypocritical or two-faced to at least not attend because they knew it was stupid. That it doesn't make any sense. I'm talking about the Sultan of Turkey, a Muslim, and the Anglican, primate. The head of the Anglican Church, the Archbishop of Canterbury. These two would not attend because they knew it was absolutely ridiculous based upon even their own convictions. So I'm going to end it with just showing that these guys were not as evil as the nominal Catholics that attended it, or anyone else that attended. At least they're not hypocritical. And this is from the official report, the World's Parliament of Religion, pages 20 and 22. It was with little surprise that the chairman learned how decided was the opposition of the Sultan of Turkey to the proposed conference, an opposition very embarrassing to the leaders of the Greek and Armenian churches in the Turkish Empire. But the position finally taken by His Grace, the Archbishop of Canterbury, excited the wonder of some of the friends of that liberal-minded prelate in Great Britain. The Archbishop's letter, which exercised a large influence over the action of the Anglican Church, was as follows. That means the Anglican Church didn't show up. They weren't as hypocritical. And here's the Anglican Archbishop's response. I am afraid that I cannot write the letter which in yours of March 20th you wish me to write, expressing a sense of the importance of the proposed conference without its appearing to be an approval of the scheme. The difficulties which I myself feel are not questions of distance and convenience, but rest on the fact that the Christian religion is the one religion. I do not understand how that religion can be regarded as a member of Parliament of Religions without assuming the equality of the other intended members and the parity of their positions and claims. Then again, your general program assumes that the Church of Rome is the Catholic Church and treats the Protestant Episcopal Church of America as outside the Catholic Church. I presume that the Church of England would be similarly classified. And that view of our position is untenable. Beyond this, while I quite understand how the Christian religion might produce its evidence before any assembly, a presentation of that religion must go far beyond the questions of evidence and must subject to the public discussion that faith and devotion, which are as characteristic and which belong to the a region too sacred for such treatment. I hope that this explanation will excuse me with you for not complying with your request. Now that's what a heretic does. The Anglican heretic is not as evil as apostate anti-pope Leo XIII and the nominal Catholics. And there puts an end to this lecture for you people who are wondering and saying, there's some really powerful evidence to show you how bad things were long before the Second Vatican Council. And I will add that all you people that rightly believe that anti-popes of the Vatican II Church, their anti-popes, are banned from office because of their interreligious abominations, you better hold the same thing with apostate anti-pope Leo XIII and all the Americanists nominal Catholics that attended that conference. For more detailed information, see RJMI book, Idolatrous World's Parliament of Religions of 1893. And as we go on this year, as I said before, In my last lecture, we're going to go on and expose some things that are as bad as that and even worse, going back to the 1300s, 1400s, and 1500s. This thing did not happen overnight. And if you do not condemn Apostate Antipope Leo XIII and Gibbons and Keene and Ireland, then you can't condemn anybody in the Vatican II Church neither. In the name of the Father, the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. This recording was produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878, and can be accessed on my website at www.johnthebaptist.us.